Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. So, on the programs there, you see three phrases, three descriptions regarding nothing is perfect, nothing is forever, and nothing is finished. So these are the three primary concepts of a term, a phrase, wabi-sabi. So has anybody heard this phrase before, this term? What does wabi-sabi mean to you? Anybody?
Beautiful in its imperfection.
Beautiful in its imperfection. So I want to start by saying this morning, wabi-sabi is an essence, a feeling, an aesthetic, an acknowledgement of the beauty of trueness. It is an experience. And this morning I'm going to work to describe and define this. But it is something that's known deeply. And I also want to say, so these are words from Japanese language. And sometimes we say, well, wabi-sabi means this, or wabi-sabi translates into English as. But I encourage us to accept this as its own. Allow this wabi-sabi itself into our vocabulary. You know, the Eurocentric languages have really become an amalgamation. So we don't, every time we say garage, well, I mean carport in English, right? So wabi-sabi is its own word. And we can immerse ourselves in that concept for what it is. The words, though, we can talk a little bit in familiar terms of English. Wabi being rustic, from nature, from the natural order. Perhaps a little bit how we understand Taoism, in the flow of the way. And sabi as a withering, an ephemeral nature. And this has come to a concept that is understood as the simplicity of what we might call the rustic. The freshness and the quietness. And a place that we can see this wabi-sabi, a place that it's pretty well known is in pottery. So we'll talk a little bit about that too. In our practice period, we've been working with Tim's book, Nothing Holy About It. And I'd like to share a passage here. And regarding the essence of raku poetry, or pottery. And this is in first person, so if you want to like move your mouth while I'm talking, that'd be cool. So Tim writes, In the 60s, it seemed to me that all the serious students were going to Japan to spend time in the traditional Zen monastery. After a retreat at Tassajara, during which I had fallen into a wonderful stillness, I decided I would go to Japan also. I began talking to Suzuki about which monastery would be best for me. He thought I should go to Eheichi, the famous Soto Zen training center where he, Katagiri, and Chino had trained. I didn't really want to go to Eheichi. There are too many tourists there and too much ritual. But Suzuki would only talk about Eheichi. So I started asking others who had spent time in Japan. I carefully weighed the pros and cons of different monasteries. I wanted to find the best place. More than anything, I wanted to deepen the delicious silence I'd fallen into at Tassajara. Out of courtesy, I kept Suzuki informed about my investigation. One morning, he and I were having breakfast in the kitchen at Zen Center. I began telling him what I'd learned about different monasteries. He seemed interested, but when I finished, he seemed more interested in his collection of Raku cups. I followed his gaze. Each cup was slightly different in shape, color, and size. Suzuki said, "If you try to find the best cup, you will not appreciate any of them." When we try to find the perfect way, the beauty of the trueness of this moment is clouded from our sight, clouded from our touch. Raku poetry, pottery. That's wonderful. actually, there's a poet named Rengetsu. She was a Japanese nun, and she would inscribe her poetry on her pottery. And every town where she became popular, once people knew her name, she would flee. So the process in which raku pottery is made, it's a slow burn, and the significance of it is in the glazing, because there are impurities and imperfections put into the glazing, combustible materials. So, you know, pieces of paper or wool, fibers, things that will burn at a different rate than the pure glaze. So it marks imperfections. It marks patterns that cannot be intentional in a intellectual or my power as a human kind of way. The pros and cons of placing the die. But rather what happens when things burn at a different rate. And in translation to English, raku means comfort, ease, relief. In these imperfections, we find the relief. And Tim describes the raku teacups reflecting a love of the simple and that those that are misfired or have been mended are treasured. Coarseness and irregularity are particularly desirable. So we find the beauty of the trueness of our imperfections. It is in what we perhaps don't want about ourselves, our suffering, that we are drawn into a deep love, a caring for that which makes us unique and beautiful. And in that we can find mercy, and mercy for one another, and a joy and a passion for seeing the light in another's imperfections, sharing this which is true of all of us. You're not the most imperfect. So I brought up a couple of things, and I'm sorry, I don't know the artists or potters that made these. Just things I found in the house here. To describe and see a little bit of how this concept of wabi-sabi plays out in a piece of pottery. So the edges are unfinished. There's, it's probably hard to see here, but an etching of a branch, which reflects the nature, the moment. And also on this one, the indentation of the potter's hand, the moment of the artist touching this, and the moment of me pretty much holding their hand, meeting their imperfection. And in this one again, the nature relief. And in particular, this fold. There's a fold here left in the design. And that I find very touching. That it's not smoothed out, but that we can still see the place where those edges meet. There's still an individual edge, but it comes together to make the whole piece in each of those rough edges it meets. And I have another piece here that is one of the teacups that we use here for retreats. And these are created by Warren McKenzie, who's a local potter. And like Ryongetsu, for quite a while he did not sign his work. He found that people were acquiring his work and selling it at high prices, or even it was finding its way into galleries and museums. And
there's a working one.
Oh, here's
Oh, you had water too?
Mm-hmm. Cool. And as Bob Dylan said, museums are graveyards. And this is living, working, active, right now. So something that Warren McKenzie said, he was talking about his training, trained at a place in England, and he said what he learned there is if you try to be good, then your work will look like someone trying to be good. And no one will believe in you. If you let yourself develop in a natural way, then you'll find your own voice. And he could be kind of sarcastic about like personal expression and, you know, wanting to point to something, but seemed more interested in that moment of making and offering and being a part of the evolution of these pieces. And he was particularly into folk arts movement, where these pieces are not meant for a museum. They are meant to be used. And that's going to mean they're going to wear, they're going to chip, they're going to break. And it's these broken pieces that can become part of the continuum. From the clay and mud of the mountain, the potter's wheel, the fire, the water, the tea, the sense of nothing lasts, nothing is forever. The mountain becomes a pretty pretty common metaphor in Zen, the steadfastness of the mountain, to sit like a mountain. In 1980, when Mount St. Helens erupted, I was living in Spokane, Washington. I was 4 years old, and I vividly remember this occurrence. The invisible, dusty whiteness of everything around us. The layer of soft ash on the ground. Wearing masks that I imagine were about the size of my head. I don't think they had like children's construction masks that they were putting on us. But I remember, wear your mask, wear your mask. This mountain is active. It is steadfast and it is churning inside. And even the mountain is not permanent. The lava flows. And the potters, this era of pottery in Washington is defined by the use of this volcanic ash in the glaze. This moment that we all shared. When there's a catastrophic event, there's a opening to recognize our interconnectedness. That moment when we are connected in a suffering that we understand, we're in the same event. So much of the pottery of this time was fired with Mount St. Helens ash. And there we can, again, in that essence of impermanence, see the moment and the continuum. Nothing is forever. Everything is changing. And nothing is finished. At a point, a point of intuition, but also recognizing this influence from Rumi, saying, past and future keep God from our sight. Burn up them both with fire. Or Sherman Alexie, who's a writer from Eastern Washington, sharing this tradition from Spokane, that's, don't slow dance with your skeletons. There's a skeleton that walks behind you, and there's a skeleton that walks ahead. And do not slow dance with your skeletons. So, in this moment of being moved, I burned like 25 years of journals. And I didn't really have an idea about this. I wasn't disavowing my past or, making a fresh start or any kind of thing like that. I just wanted to watch it happen. And, well, here's a piece of irony about it, because, and that's particularly, shows me this idea that nothing is finished. So as I was burning these journals, I was writing about what I saw. Right? And really, it took pretty much all day. And I watched the fire come about one journal at a time, one page at a time. And as they were burning, I could even read many of the words, many of the passages on the pages as they burned away. And I'll share with you that that journal entry from that moment. A friendly spring afternoon fire to release 25 years of journal entries. Witness the words burn away. Words about staying awake until it hurts. Lovers burn, and friends, and the early entries. Dear Diary, from age 9, where I complained. Sometimes I cry at night, and I don't know why. Spiral notebooks that barely made it back from Alaska. Tiny notebooks that traveled the towers of Amir Timur so that I can come home, so that I can be home. I don't feel dramatic. I do not feel zen. But I feel like this task before me is exactly my work. I do not feel overwhelmed, but smell like smoke. There's one red covered marked SOS. When I first determined to keep personal entries alongside classroom notes and hit upon a theme, in clowning class, in social justice studies, in late night drunken stumbling, how does change occur? Very cinematic. And the pages open up like petals and issue forth flames. These words of rant, of rage. Could they really burn away? Even here, high school, Sir Walter Scott, of all his praise and violence, glory of war, says, a 1,000 fearful images and dire suggestions glance along the mind when it is moody and discontented with itself. Command them to stand and show themselves. The pages turn beige, charcoal black, to ashen bright day. So I think in this experience, ash joins the ash of the volcano, the ash of the glaze of the dishes, and in this nothing is finished. Goes on. Oh, I had the chance to, I worked for a while at a museum that was also a research facility, and there was a paleobotanist there who was working on a research project about what they called then global warming, climate change, and her thesis that she was working on, she was looking at the era of the demise of life on Earth, of the dinosaurs, and noting that this too, you know, was related to the burning of fossil fuels, the volcanic activity. However, that this volcanic activity that occurred over thousands and thousands of years, humans had sped to a rate of 50, 70 years. So it's not a new thing, climate change. But we are expediting it. But even then, it's not finished. The earth will prevail. I want to talk a moment about this Sir Walter Scott quote that for some reason interested me in high school, and that again is, "A thousand fearful images and dire suggestions glance upon the mind when it is moody and discontented with itself. Command them to stand and show themselves." Don't push them away. Don't try to hide from them. But trusting in the steadfastness of the mountain, allow the churning to occur. Exult in our imperfections and learn from them. And find that beauty of trueness. In this moment, there's an imperfection, dissatisfaction, nuisance, say in sitting, an itch while we're sitting. Can acknowledge that itch, but what is this moment of the itch? What is this breath of the discomfort? And by allowing that discomfort to join this breath, by commanding it to show itself, we can allow it to be part of a continuum. We don't have to hold it, so we can exhale. Somebody told me a magic trick of three breaths. Again, regarding this itch, this zazen, itch or an ache or something, that if you give it 3 breaths of full attention, by the time you get to the 3rd breath, you've moved your attention to the breath, and then to the moment, and then to the goneness of the itch, and the not finished of zazen. And reflect in that moment the joy and beauty of the simple. So I'll ask again, what does wabi-sabi mean to you? What is your most beautiful imperfection? Does anybody care to comment on that? Yes.
I might provide a different definition of perfection. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, the history of perfection is to be thorough, not to be imperfect. And so, I think we have, in essence, in our society, decided that perfection means something that is Republican perfection.
Mm.
And so by you using that definition, I understand what you're saying. But I think by the true essence of what perfection is, all of us and everything actually is perfect. Because we are thorough.
Yeah.
Think of it that way. I think that will solve almost all our issues.
And I liken that to the precision we look for in ritual, and the activity of that, stressing the activity of it, but the perfection isn't in doing everything correctly or perfectly, but rather just noticing and observing the moment within that structure. You know, and being thorough in the way we bow and the way that we engage.
The way that we are.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, Benton.
Deb collects pottery in I grow bonsai at Buddha. And it is very much letting a tree happen the way it's going to happen. I'm just letting it. And it's some of these pots that we get are from Otter and Red Wing. Same random glaze.
Yeah.
The word wabi-sabi I didn't know before, and it just fits so perfectly. Do we have any more Mackenzie pieces, Deb?
No.
Yes, I think Will Swanson was heavily influenced by it. We got a lot of these.
Yeah.
My most beautiful imperfection is my unattachment. And then, maybe with my unattachment to the talk, I saw the button feel the burn while you're talking about the fire.
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah.
There's a book that became a movie, Wild.
Oh, yeah.
Based on a real story that she hiked the Pacific Crest.
I think up, yeah.
But there's a line at the end of the book, which also is at the end of the movie, that it's just how wild it is to let it be.
To join our wildness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got me thinking about the definition of perfection. And I was just in manufacturing, in lean manufacturing, we think that a perfect process is one that has no waste. And we know that we'll never get there. But what it serves is, it's a guide, it shows us the gap from our present state to what we hope to achieve. And we just move towards it, knowing that we're never going to get there. It doesn't exist, or nobody's been able to document one. Second thing, it was just thought was interesting. Saw a documentary on Mount Rushmore, and apparently the artist—it's not finished. He left several inches for erosion that's going to take tens of thousands of years. So as we see it, and it seems very stable. It's a work of art. It's still getting made.
Mm-hmm. There's a line from Dogen that this leanness or this moving along the path without having a or knowing the destination exactly. But he wrote or said, wrote probably, if you cannot see the path as you walk, how will you know the way? So this moment of acting in our imperfections, our tripping and trapping along the path, that is the way, big way, the flow and function of our thoroughness. Yeah, John.
Where I see perfect imperfection is looking at a tree. One way, one day, and then a storm knocks a branch off of the paint down. It's perfectly imperfect. And another tree grows next to it, and it has an energy from the sun. It's just ever changing. Never the same in any one way. Perfectly imperfect.
And my hope, if I may indulge in a hope for Zazen, is to join that. My hope in poetry and in pottery and art is to join that flow. And that resilience against the perfection that says there is a right way. Resilience against that kind of perfection.
I do wonder if there's like a similar concern that, like, I think maybe probably specifically about, like, initially you get into this idea that all you want to make is all you decide you want to make things perfect and imperfect, and you kind of had this kind of slot for it before. All these very, very elegant pottery, good, this perfect pottery is bad. You mentioned this picture, well, now this perfect pottery is good, and now again, another pottery is bad. this new definition of perfection, like, it's not this kind of fashion, right? It's like, I think maybe the goal is like the playful attitude towards the brain. Like, you could, you know, the whole goal is to go away from that today with perfection. You might be able to go back and do it. But you want to play, you can make perfect.
It comes back to that try to be good.
Stacy, will you repeat what he said?
He was talking about that the idea of what's desirable or what is beautiful could change. My interpretation, if I get it wrong, please let me know, but that this aesthetic of wabi-sabi could become popular and become the ideal, and so there might become a movement to try to emulate that, try to be good at that, and that essence of playfulness and the moment and the imperfection can also appear in really clean-cut porcelain or some other kind of style of pottery. Oh, yeah, that it's not the style, it's the essence of the making. Huh.
It's kind of like the playfulness is the perfection. As soon as we let go of whatever our vision was when we came into it, and did all the playfulness to happen, and the perfection comes to me.
The playfulness is the perfection. I'll repeat that one too. Anything rising in you that needs to be offered before we close up? Yes, Roger.
I'm glad to have a playfulness about the word wabi-sabi, the imperfection of things, and I'm thinking about horseradish in English. Sabi sauce.
Yeah.
And there's nothing like getting a blast of wasabi to make you feel for that moment.
It's an encounter. Hmm. Yes.
I think the word wasabi parallels well with love. In my mind, I thought instantly, I was like, well, that's exactly the same for love, has that same comfort underlying. And grace is all. It's,
yeah. Something else I noticed is hearing that the it doesn't have to imply a sentimentality.
And it just is.
What about something like Muzak and Maul? When it seems, I mean, it's not very wasabi and. But yet it might be thorough. Or it certainly is. And not even Muzak. It's not even Muzak anymore. It's like classic rock and roll, or it's like some, you know, sultry 21-year-old corpse singer.
I'm wondering, just an immediate response is, you know, it's our responsibility in that moment to not let it be a dead thing, but to let it be part of that environment in that moment. I'm in a bow to close here, and thank you all for this moment and this coming together in this room. I thank you.